Three of the books of the Tanakh are ascribed to Shlomo HaMelech, the King Solomon. Shir HaShirim, the Great Song of Songs. Mishle, which is the topic of discussion here tonight. And Kohelet. All three have a completely different style. Completely different. Shir HaShirim is a poem. It's a love poem about the relationship between God and the Jewish people. Mishle, at first glance, is a collection of proverbs, one verse having almost nothing to do with the next. That each proverb stands by itself. And Kohelet is a long, the yeshiva would say, a Musar Shmuis. It's a long, long description of the follies of life and of human beings, and of almost the hopelessness of man when faced with fate that he cannot discern. See, I've heard three very different books. The Talmud and Baba Basra teaches us that these three books, even though they were inspired and written by King Solomon, they were edited about 200 years later by King Chizkiyahu, the king of Yehuda, and his Sanhedrin. The interpretations of that are many, but basically what it means is that the books are written by Solomon, but they underwent the editorial choice of later generations. And therefore, even though nothing was added, there were things that were omitted that do not appear in the final version. And again, if we look in the Meforshim, the Netziv and others, they have this view of these three books of Solomon as being the most enigmatic books in the Torah. The hardest ones to decipher. What does he want here? For instance, the books of Yehoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, and Melachim are narratives, as we heard today on our tour. The books of Neviim Achronim, so the prophets told us what was going to happen, taught us moral lessons. The books of Ksuvim, and so Megillas Esther stands for itself, Megillas Ruth stands for itself, Megillas Eicha stands for itself. Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, again, are books of narrative, or books of, Daniel's a book of mystery. Well, what are these three books? What are they doing here? And that's a problem that all the Meforshim grapple with, but that's a different lecture and a different topic. I am not going to dwell on that, except as how it affects the three topics in Mishle that I want to speak to you about. Mishle, Shlomo ben David, the parables of Shlomo ben David, who was the king in Jerusalem. Now, we all know from the Tanakh that Shlomo was the wisest of all men. We'll have a discussion tonight of what is wisdom. Wisdom does not preclude behaving in a manner that really is folly. Shlomo is the example. The wisest of all men falls prey to so many things that we would say anyone with common sense would be able to ignore. It went to such an extent that the rabbis in the 10th Perek in Sanhedrin, in Perek Chelek, so they wanted to write him out of the book completely. They wanted to say that ein lo chelek lo lo mabo. But the Jewish people wouldn't let that happen. You'll notice in the prayers in the slichot that we say. So we say, Anenu kishonisa ledovid ulishlomo bno b'Yerushalayim. Answer us as you were kind enough to answer David HaMelech and his son Shlomo when they were kings in Jerusalem. In most of our prayer books, Shlomo appears in parentheses, meaning that in many texts he is not included in that, because he's a very ambivalent character. And the Talmud says that he had too many wives. He made strategic alliances with Egypt, which backfired. He had too much money. Didn't know how to handle it. The wisest of all men. So therefore, we have to search for a definition of wisdom, which Shlomo himself provides for us. But many times in life, we know that, sometimes you go to a medical doctor who says you have to lose weight, and he weighs 100 pounds more than he should. He's right, but he can't control it, right? And you go to all sorts of people that are very wise. In Yiddish, they used to say, Alle Schuster's gehen barfuß. All shoemakers go without shoes. And the famous expression from the Greeks was, physician, heal thyself. So that's one area that has to be considered. In Yiddish, there was a phrase which summed up the Jewish idea of wisdom. Says, Besser zu verlieren mit achochem wie zu gewinnen mit anar. It's better to lose with a wise man than to win with a fool. Now, Shlomo HaMelech in Mishle sets up, his hero is the wise man, the villain is the fool. The fool is worse than the Rasha, because a fool always leads to being a Rasha. So what is a wise man and what is a fool? There was a famous Zionist orator by the name of Nochem Sokolov. So he once said, it says in the Torah that the Jewish people, Mi am chochem v'novon agoy agodol hazeh. Where is there such a wise, understanding, intelligent people like the people of Israel? So he said, if the am chochem v'novon would only have a little seichel, then it would help a little. And we are living witness to that. That the smartest and the intellectuals and the most knowledgeable and the elite are idiots. So that poses a problem for Shlomo. So he begins. He says in his famous pasuk, Ladas Chochma, to know wisdom, Lahovin Imre Vina, to understand words. Again, Vina, we'll discuss all three phrases that he uses. And Lases Lanar Das, and to give to children Das. So there are three things. There's Chochma, there's Bina, and there's Das. So Shlomo may have been Chabad, but I don't think so. So the rabbis define it as follows. There are different kinds of wisdom. There's wisdom which is pure intellect. I just finished reading a biography of Albert Einstein. Einstein never worked in laboratories. He never proved his theories. Thought of them. He'd walk around and think. And through his thought process, he was somehow able to visualize theories and rules of physics that eventually prove that the universe operates in accordance with those theories. And that's pure intellect. because he had a job. He was a patent clerk in Zurich. He was never a professor at a university. He never taught physics till much later in his life, till he came to Princeton, and they gave him the think tank. But he envisioned things in his mind. It's a gift. Just as it's a gift that musical composers hear it in their mind before they put the notes on the paper. And Beethoven, for instance, who was deaf and never could hear what he wrote, but in his mind he had the whole symphony. So our mind possesses that ability. That's a gift of God. There's no school that teaches it. There's no teacher. There's no one that, no textbook for it. You have it or you don't. His famous letter, Einstein to President Roosevelt in 1939 regarding the atomic bomb, he said that according to the theories of physics, there is enough energy in this pen to blow up the universe 90 million times. That's how much energy is stored in a small amount of mass. And he says, therefore, someone will work out how to be able to release that. So that's the theory of the atomic bomb. They take an atom and they convert the mass of the atom to energy. And in an oversimplification, that's what happens. That's atomic energy. That's why you don't need any fuel. You don't need any, it's all here. So you have to be able to think of that. And especially you have to be able to think of it when the whole world says you're crazy. Because he turned Newtonian physics on its head. He canceled everything that happened before him. Made a new world. So the rabbis say that's one kind of chokhmah. There's a second kind of chokhmah, which we call technology. The ability to make things work. Like now, Baruch Hashem, at my stage of life, I finally learned how to change a light bulb. So that's technology. How to make things work. So there are people who are terrific at it. There are people that can be geniuses in everything, and they're absolutely useless when it comes to that. It's a different type of wisdom. Completely different type of wisdom. How to be able to be mechanical and how to be creative in these types of things. I saw this week that the Boeing aircraft wheeled out its new plane, the Dreamliner, 787, I got 700 orders for it, and the plane to revolutionize the future. So for a lot of people, what was wrong with the old plane? But the nature of man is that we always want to improve what we have. And therefore they figured out a plane that's going to be 40% more fuel efficient, it's going to be more comfortable for all the passengers except on one airline, and which has ordered a few of the planes, I'm afraid. And in general, it's a tremendous achievement. They built special engines, it's able to fly over the whole world with two engines. So that's technological chokhmah, the wisdom of technology. Then there's a third type of chokhmah that the rabbis, and they took it all out of Shlomo, out of Mishle. There's a chokhmah of morality, of social wisdom. Since if there is no sense of morality in society, if there are no rules, so to speak, that govern the behavior of human beings one to another. So Ish Yisrael Chaim Blo, the rabbi said. Everybody swallows up everybody else. Now you have, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Lebanon. Because there's no sense of, anything wrong. And therefore, there's a chokhmah that's called Musar. And we discussed piety on Saturday night. I didn't want to discuss it before Shabbos. But when we discussed piety on Saturday night, so then we'll see these ideas of Musar. But none of these ideas alone is what Shlomo means by chokhmah. And here we come to a key understanding. The Gaon of Vilna wrote a commentary to Mishlei. Now, it's interesting. He could have written a commentary, you know, to Yeshayahu or to any of the Svar Sifrei Kodesh. I mean, they say that they once asked Reb Chaim Volozhiner, what's the difference between him and the Gaon? So Chaim Volozhiner said, I know the Talmud the way a Jew knows Ashrei. I can begin at the beginning and recite the whole Talmud. But he said the Gaon could recite it backwards. So the Gaon is called Roslo Onislei. No, nothing was hidden from him. Why did he pick Mishlei as the book to write? And he has a very, very deep commentary on it. I mean, the commentary needs a commentary. You almost have to be the Gaon to figure out what he wants. But there's one point that he makes that I want to deal with. He says two things that comprise this one point. The first thing is, he says, what Shlomo means by chokhmah is godly chokhmah, to be able to somehow penetrate the veil which separates God from man, to understand what godly wisdom is. He says that's the true chokhmah. The true chokhmah is to be able to fathom God's will. And that is what Paro said to Yosef. Ki ein chokham v'novon kamocha. So he should have said, I mean, there's no soothsayer like you. There's no dream interpreter like you. There's no prophet like you. But the Torah, when it quotes even what someone says in a conversation, every word in the Torah is true, and every word in the Torah lends itself to the 70 faces of the Torah. So what did Paro, I don't know if Paro meant it, but the Torah meant it. Paro said, well, nobody is a chochem v'novon like you are. So the Torah meant to tell us, the Gaon says, that you know God's intent somehow. You read his mind here, Kavi Yochel. That's chochem. That's the idea of being a wise person. And then he says a great Kabbalistic thought. He says, all wisdom, we just said it in Meir, b'chochma poseach shiorim, b'svuna mishani itim. God created the world b'chochma. So there's a wisdom, a godly wisdom that's inherent in the universe. That's present here. He said that godly wisdom, and this is a Kabbalistic idea. The Kabbalah says, for instance, that when the great Big Bang occurred, so sparks of holiness emanated from it from the moment of creation, and these sparks of holiness, the Nitzotzos, HaKdusha, exist all over the world. And our job is somehow, but they're all hidden, clustered within a husk, and our job is to release them. That's a great Kabbalistic concept. The Ari especially develops it. The Gaon, who was a great Kabbalist, also speaks in those terms, but he speaks about it in Chochmah. He says God's wisdom, Kaviyochel, in the creation of the universe, in which we stand back in awe. Even Einstein, who said God does not roll dice. This is not accidental. So we stand back in awe at the perfection of the universe, something which Chazal always emphasized to us. When you look at a flower, you're supposed to see it. The Gemara says, Al tikre hatsur elo hatsayer hagodo. God is the great painter. If you take a look at a rose and you see how many shades of red there is in a rose, we think people are great painters because they make a beautiful still life, right? But if you see the real still life, so that's part of the godliness, so to speak. So the Gaon says, the godliness which created this world, which was done with such wisdom, unfathomable wisdom, and with perfection that we cannot even imagine, shards of it, broken pieces of it descended to earth, of that wisdom. And that's the godly wisdom that we can attain. The pieces that fell to earth from the great wisdom that created the world. And he says, therefore, the Torah and the mitzvos are part of that wisdom. The Ribbono Shel Olam shared that with us. But the wisdom is lamala mechochmas odom. It is above any idea of wisdom that a man can have. It's beyond our human comprehension of wisdom. So it doesn't fit into the first three categories that I mentioned. It's not great theory and intellect, and it's not great technological achievement, and it's not even great moral appreciations of the world. It's a wisdom that is beyond us. And that is the chokhmah that Shlomo speaks about. So how does one acquire that wisdom? So the Gaon says that wisdom is, again, it's not dependent on a person's IQ, and it's not dependent upon a person's education even. What it is dependent upon is a person's ability to communicate with oneself, with the godliness, the soul that is within us. That is the source of our wisdom. And when people are unable to do that, when all wisdom is external from us and not internal within us, so then that is a type of wisdom that allows us folly, that allows us to do things foolishly. The rabbis say that Shlomo HaMelech suffered from hubris, he suffered from arrogance, because in the Torah it said, lo yarbe lo noshim, he shouldn't have many. And he said, well, that's for ordinary kings, but I'm greater than that. And it said that you shouldn't have too much money. And he said, oh, that's for ordinary kings, but for I can have too much money. And it said not to return to Egypt, not to make alliances with Egypt, not to bring horses from Egypt. You know, that's for everybody else and not for me. So arrogance is a sin, even if it is not translated into any behavior. Because what arrogance does is that we lose complete contact with our soul and who we are. And therefore we place ourselves above all other human beings, and we think we have different rules. It has nothing to do with us. My favorite story that I always use, I've heard it more times than you have, so don't worry, is that the first Sunday, I was ahead of the OU for 5 years, OU Kashrus. The first Sunday, I decided that I wanted to see it on the ground as to how it works. So there was a big banquet held at the Pierre Hotel in New York, in Manhattan, and it was under an OU caterer. So I show up uninvited. But there were like 9,000 people there at the smorgasbord. Nobody noticed me. And I'm walking around, and I notice that the mashgiach is at the smorgasbord. And he's partaking, and he's socializing, and you know. So he didn't know who I was. So I went over to him. I said, are you the mashgiach? He said, yeah, I'm the mashgiach. I said, don't you think the mashgiach belongs in the kitchen? And he says to me, what's the problem? It's under the OU. So, you know, that's one way of looking at life. So it's got nothing to do with me, right? So it's all going to work without me, right? Nothing to do with me. And that's why the rabbis emphasize that humility, ma'od ma'od have a shafal ruach. The Rambam says everybody should try and have characteristics that are in the middle. You shouldn't be a miser, you shouldn't be a spendthrift. You should always try to be in the middle in life. The shvil hazahav, the golden medium. However, the Rambam says there are two exceptions. One exception is humility. There is no limit to humility. And he said the other exception is anger. That one should avoid anger at all costs. Those are the two exceptions. Because those are the two things the Rambam says that make you lose sight of who you are, and you lose sight of the spirituality within you, and therefore you lose sight of the intrinsic wisdom that Shlomo is trying to teach us. There are examples of this chokhmah. In halacha, for instance, halacha creates a different world than the real world that we live in, so to speak. There's a real world and there's a halachic world. I'll give you an example. We all know that there is a plague called Tzaraas that somehow exists. Tzaraat, whatever. It's not leprosy, but whatever it was, it's not pleasant. And the halacha is, if a person has the tzaraat, the house has the tzaraat, the garments have a tzaraat, the halacha is that until the Kohen says that it's tomei, it's not tomei, even though it was there. So what does the declaration of the Kohen have to do with the reality of the fact that tzaraat is there? The answer is that we're living in a halachic world. And in a halachic world, the reality of tzaraat without the Kohen saying it, so it's not tzaraat. Let me give you a practical example of that in halacha. It says, Veherohu HaKohen. So it should say, Vehero Oso HaKohen. He should have shown, the man should show the blemish to the Kohen so the Kohen can diagnose it and say whether or not he's Tomei or Tohor. Why did it say Veherohu? So the Gemara darshans, and this is another point, the drushes of Chazal are based on a halachic world. They're not based on the reality, so to speak, of the world. And therefore, you can have the rabbis have Avraham Avinu have a conversation with David HaMelech 5,000 years later, and it's not a problem because the halachic world works differently. Part of the problem of disbelief, God forbid, is the fact that we attempt to take the halachic world and apply the rules of the so-called real world to it, and it doesn't work. The best example, again, I don't want to show off my Einsteinian brilliance, but the best example is Einstein himself. Einstein developed the theory of relativity, general relativity, specific relativity. Einstein also created the theory of quanta, that light moves in particles. It's not a wave, particles, and he explained how gravity works. It's all not the way anybody ever thought about it. So when he proved, it was proven by empiric experiments many times that the theory of relativity is correct. Light bends, time is different in space than it is on Earth. It's a whole different world. The only problem is the other theory that he created, quantum mechanics, is a direct contradiction to relativity. And quantum mechanics has also been proven empirically in the laboratory as being correct. And because of quantum mechanics, we're able to have the computer and the transistor and everything else that works. So you got two theories, both proven correct. that cannot be reconciled. And this has been called the search for the unified theory. Einstein worked on it for 35 years, and his greatest frustration in life is that he never could come up with it. Nobody has ever been able yet to come up with it. So how does that agree? The answer is that there's a different world than just the physical world that we deal with. And somehow in that different world, these things are going to somehow not contradict. It will make sense. Well, that's the idea of the halachic world too. So the rabbi said, v'hero ha-kohen, that the kohen not only has to look at the tzoras, the kohen has to look at the person that has the tzoras. And the Gemara says, for instance, if you're the chosen that's getting married, so the Kohen will tell him, come back in 2 weeks. I don't want to see you now. He's got the tzaras, right? The answer is, until the Kohen says, Tomei, he doesn't have the tzaras. The famous story of Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan Spekter, who was the great posek in the Lithuanian world, at the end of the 19th century in Lita, he was the Rav of Kovna. So he was famous for questions regarding agunos, the real agunos, not today's aguna. Today's aguna is a question of fighting over a get. That's not the case of aguna. The case of aguna is that a husband disappears and we can't find his body. And we don't have convincing evidence. So what do we do then? So there was a famous case in Kovna that the husband disappeared after 4 years, 5 years. The wife was a younger woman yet, and she came to the Beis Din, etc. And Yitzchak Yochanan worked on it, and they found all sorts of methods somehow to free her. And they said that she's free. She's mutter to get married. She's allowed to get married to another man. And she went out and remarried. 2 years later, the husband walks in to Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan. And he says, Rebbe, you know, I'm her husband. So Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan said to him, either you're a liar or you're dead. Those are the two choices that you have. Because the halacha said you're dead, then you're dead. So that sounds stupid, right? The answer is, in the halachic world, he's dead. The rabbi said, you know, tzadikim b'misosam likroim chayim, a righteous person, even when he's no longer physically in the world, is still alive, and a rosha can be walking around and he's dead, doesn't exist. By the way, they proved later that he was a liar. He was a charlatan. He wanted to extort money. But in the halachic world, these things happen over and over and over again. And that's the true chokhmah that Solomon refers to. The chokhmah is the ability to see the world outside of the box that encompasses us. To see it in this idea of chokhmah. And that is why there's such an overlap in Chassidus regarding all of these matters, because Chassidus is Kabbalah based, and basically the Chassidic world is not the world that we live in, right? It's not the real world. It's a different world completely. And in that world, all of these things make sense. And that's why it's given to all of the stories and all of the legends and all of the miracles and all of the things. And because of the fact that it's based upon the fact that it is outside of the box of our real experience. Now, the Rambam, for instance, who's a supreme rationalist, would not buy that. The Gaon of Vilna, who was a Kabbalist, also was not willing to buy into that. But the Jewish people generally have been willing to buy into it. And I think a great deal of the success of Chassidus and the fact that it is so powerful and so appealing, and today, let's say, the spiritual people that have such a hold on people, is simply because the real world is too terrible to live in. It's too painful. So we have to say that somehow there's a different world. And a different world, you know, then the sun shines and all of this makes sense and we shouldn't get nervous and it's all going to turn out all right. And because in the real world, you know, we all ought to pack our bags and at least leave Sunday morning. So chokhmah is the ability to raise oneself from the constraints of the world that we live in. And therefore, chokhmah is the ability to see generations unborn yet, to realize that if one is a grandparent or a great-grandparent, that there's an influence there, and one has to exercise that influence. To be able to see, we always say, Reivonim Levonecha. So the Mefarshim say, Reivonim Levonecha, if you can see future generations that may not know you even. So then you can also see Sholom Al Yisrael, and that's the end of the Pasuk. There'll be a day that there'll be peace for Israel as well. Aye, right now, or for the foreseeable future, we can't see any of those things. So that's because we don't look with wise eyes. We look with realistic eyes. But wisdom is something that is beyond us. And therefore, Chochmah defines for us everything in life. Our family, our career, how we behave. Because that's what we want to see. We want to see the chokhmah of life. And that's really what I began with, that's why it's better to lose with a chokhm, because if you lose with a chokhm, you didn't lose. Looks like you lost. And if you win with a fool, it looks like you win, but you really lost. Because there's a different dimension to this whole idea of wisdom. I want to mention here it says, Shlomo says, Yiras Reishis Chochmah Yiras Hashem. The beginning of Chochmah is fear of God. So fear of God has nothing to do with wisdom. You can have as I pointed out, you have great intellectual accomplishments. You can have a great education and not be a God-fearing person. I heard this from a descendant of the Chofetz Chaim, that the Chofetz Chaim's daughter, you know, something which in our world would be, would never make it, but she married one of the students in the Chofetz Chaim's yeshiva, who later became a great Rosh Yeshiva himself, but the father of the student was a plain Jew, a butcher. That's in the Chofetz Chaim's mechut. In a plain Jew. The father, the butcher, the father who was the butcher was so embarrassed that he didn't come to his son's wedding. Because he said, how can I come to the son's wedding? You know, everybody will say, you know, the Eliker Tzaddik and the great Gon and everything, you know, and I'm a butcher. So he didn't come to the wedding. And Chofetz Chaim, after the wedding, got hold of his mechutin, and he said, well, were you sick, etc.? How come you didn't come? So he said, Rebbe, you know, I didn't come, you know, it's pastnet that I should come. It wouldn't be a covet for you. He said, you have no idea what a mistake you make. He said, in heaven, Aposhita Erlech Eid sits ahead of most of the Gaonim of our time. Because in heaven they have a different way of looking at it. That's the halachic world again. It's a different world. And the Gemara says that one of the Amoraim died, or near-death experience, and he went to heaven. And when they revived him a few days later and he came back to life, they said, what did you see there? So he said, Olam hofuch reishi, I saw the world is upside down. Tzadikim lamata, the righteous are sitting, in the bleacher seats. You know, and then the plain people, without great knowledge, etc., they're lamala. Tachtonim lamala. So the Gemara says, they said to him, you said, Olam hofuch ro'yisa, you saw the world upside down. Olam bora ro'yisa, for the first time you saw the way it is. You saw it clearly. That's the way it is. So that's chokhmah. So that's why Shlomo says, Reish is chokhmah, yiras Hashem. Yiras Hashem is not that, you know, you're afraid that God will throw lightning bolts at you. Yiras Hashem means that in everything that a person does, he takes God into account also. All of us, and I shouldn't say all of us, how do I know that? I get into trouble when I don't take God into account. You gotta, you know, like, got nothing to do with him. You know, what I do with my money, what I do, you know, that's up to me. I don't take him into account. So that's a weakness in Yiras Hashem, because Yiras Hashem is b'chol drachecha do'ehu. In everything that you do, you have to know do'ehu, know him, meaning you have to know that he's also involved. My famous story again, that I all the bochrim that went to my yeshiva for 25 years, I'm happy to say that they have talmidim, or they have synagogue members that come back and tell me the story now. But when I began my career at the OU, so Rabbi Alexander Rosenberg of blessed memory was the head of the OU Kashrus division. A great, clever, wonderful, pious Jew. Special person, one of the great people that I ever knew. He was a Hungarian Rav, and he had a great forehead, and he had hooded eyes. He was absolutely inspiring. The non-Jewish companies absolutely adored him. He was a Kiddush Hashem. So on the way to tell you this story, I'm going to tell you another story. In 1974, when I was the head of the OU Kashrus, so our cousins made an oil boycott. Remember, you couldn't get gasoline in the United States. And we had a company called Mead Johnson that made vitamins for babies, Trivisol, Polyvisol. And those vitamins had the OU. And the vitamins, the vial of the vitamins was 75% glycerin, liquid glycerin, and 25% vitamins. But it was in a glycerin suspension that we used to squirt into the mouths of our kids. Where did they get the glycerin? From oil. We got to make it kosher, right? Because the other type of glycerin came from animal fat, which was not kosher. Vayi ayom, there's no oil in America. So I get a call from Mead Johnson. I remember it now. I'm sitting in the office, and I get a call. The vice president of Mead Johnson's on the phone. He said, I've got 100,000 labels printed with the OU. I have no glycerin, kosher glycerin left. The only glycerin I can buy is animal glycerin. I can't shut down the line, and I can't destroy those labels. Rabbi, what can you do for me? So I gave the great rabbinic answer, I'll call you back. Every rabbi should know that line by heart. Never answer what you can't answer. I'll call you back. He said, but I said, I told you I'm going to call you back. Don't worry, I'll call you. What am I going to do? So I call up Procter & Gamble. There were two sources of kosher glycerin in the United States. One was Shell Oil Company in Texas. So Shell Oil has no oil. Forget it. Procter & Gamble in San Francisco still had oil for some reason. They were still making kosher glycerin. But they didn't have any extra kosher glycerin. This guy needed 4 or 5 tank cars of kosher glycerin to get rid of 100,000 labels. So I called up the vice president at Procter & Gamble, and I said to him, listen, this is a terrible situation, and I know that I'm asking the world of you, and I cannot guarantee you that this guy will ever be a customer of yours. I said, but can you save us? Can you send them 4 tank cars of OU glycerin? So the man says to me, if I do that, will Rabbi Rosenberg in heaven know that I did that? I didn't ask the vice president of Procter & Gamble. Are you still afraid of Rabbi Rosenberg? So I told him, I said, if you do such a wonderful thing in heaven, it counts. He said, okay, you got it. He gave me the numbers of the tank cars, and we called up Mike and me, Johnson, and the tank cars came in. And that's it. And then after that, they went to Trey for glycerin, but they didn't have the OU on the labels, and then that's it. So that was Rosenberg. So I'm sitting in the office one day with Rabbi Rosenberg, like I'm a fly on the wall. And I wanted to see how the system worked. And a Jew walks in. Rabbi Rosenberg was enormously partial to Holocaust survivors. He gave them hechsherim free. He bent over backwards for them, you know, and they took advantage, not all of them, but some of them took terrible advantage. And he knew it, but he didn't. He used to tell me, he said, Chalameyad Sukkis, my yontiv is, I go down to Williamsburg and I stand on the street corner. And I see them all wheeling their buggies and dressed up. He said, I saw them all in the camps, because he was an American chaplain in the camps. See, that's my oneg yontiv. I stand on the street corner. He says, of course, they don't look at me because I don't, I'm modern, but I stand on the corner. So a Jew walks in, one of these guys, Chaim Shereed, and he tells him, Rabbi Rosenberg, I'm making this business. I bought the factory. We're starting production. We're starting production in 2 days, and I need the OU. So Rabbi Rosenberg says, you need the OU. It's there's a whole process you have to go through, and the rabbinical commission has to, and we have to make inspections. You know, it takes a few months before we can give you a definitive answer. He says, but I'm opening in 2 days. He said, and I'm printing the labels already. You got to help me. Rosenberg says to him, listen, I'd love to help you, but, I can't, you know. So he says to him, I'll tell you, Rabbi Rosenberg, you know, this is a new company. I own all the stock. I'll give you 5% of the stock. Rosenberg sits there like this, you know, with his great hooded eyes, half closed, and, you know, he doesn't say a word. So the guy, after a minute, you know, he gets nervous. He said, okay, 7.5%. Rosenberg doesn't say a word, not a word. So finally, he can't control himself. He says, listen, Rabbi Rosenberg, 10%, but more than that I can't do. So Rabbi Rosenberg turns to him and he says, I want to ask you one question. Was sagt Gott dazu? What would God say to this conversation? That ended the conversation. So I'm willing to modify it, right? What would you tell it to the IRS? Would you like it to be on the front page of the New York Times? That's chokhmah. B'chol drachecha do'eyu, to know God in everything that you do. V'zog God. What does God say to this? That's the real chokhmah. So we think the real chokhmah is I'm working out the deal and I got the best, you know, and I got the advantage and, you know, I'll get a bigger... You missed the whole point. That's not chokhmah. Chokhmah is b'chol drachecha da'eyu, right? That everything that you do is God's wisdom there, right? You know, I always say that since I became a Baruch Hashem, a grandfather, many times over, so I started to behave myself. Because I want that my grandchildren should have a high opinion of me. God does that to us many times. Forces us to be good. They forget to put out the dessert table. So God did us a favor. We don't realize God's favors. We don't realize God's weapons. Anti-Semitism is undoubtedly a weapon of the Rabboni Shalom. There is no other way to look at it. You don't want to be Jewish? I'll make you Jewish. Yeah, you don't want to be Jewish? Good, fine. So, you know, can't get invited to a British university. Goodbye. Yeah, but I'm not. You know, what do you want from me? You know, Yechesef Yom Kippur. I got nothing to do with that. Because there's a chokhmah involved. And the chokhmah, the wisdom, is to know what God is. And therefore, the Gemara stresses over and over again that intellect alone is not efficient and does not achieve goals if it does not have this element of godly wisdom to it. In fact, intellect, as I mentioned before, can make people arrogant. It can make people destructive. 30% of all the commandants of the Nazi death camps had either a PhD or an MD. Because of the fact that that piece of wisdom is missing. And that's what the Gemara means, that even though Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, is the wisest of all men, he doesn't have wisdom. Because if he would have wisdom, it wouldn't have happened to him. He wouldn't have had 1,000 wives, and he wouldn't have had all the money, and he wouldn't have been thrown off the throne, and he wouldn't have had a son that split the kingdom of Judah and of Israel. None of that would have happened if there would have been wisdom. The Gemara says on Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur that he had wisdom. He had wisdom. What kind of wisdom? You know, you're building, he's a good architect, right? We're going to build the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, so we'll get I.M. Pi or Frank Gehry to build it, right? He's a good architect to build it. What's it got to do with wisdom? Because to build the Mishkan, you have to build it out of the box. You have to build it with God's wisdom. You have to take him into account. You have to be able to see why the Mizbeach looks the way it looks and why the menorah looks the way it looks. That's what the Gemara means. Moshe Rabbeinu Niskashe. He didn't know how to make the menorah. He didn't know how to make the menorah, so he didn't know. So what do you mean? Who expects that Moshe Rabbeinu should be a goldsmith? It's not his job. The answer is the menorah, the wisdom of the menorah he didn't get yet. That was beyond him originally. Only when he understood it could the menorah be created. And how did he create the menorah? He took the gold and threw it in the fire, and the menorah sprang out. The Gemara says that miracle happened twice. It happens by the menorah. That Moshe throws the menorah, the gold, into the fire, and the menorah springs out. And it happens by the eagle. It happens by the golden calf. Aaron doesn't know what to do. He throws it into the fire, and the calf, golden calf, jumps out. So Gemara says, how do you reconcile that? Same thing. Here's a great man, Moshe, gold, thrown in the fire, out comes a menorah. Here's a great man, Aaron, gold, throws it in the fire, the eagle jumps out. So the commentators say, depends whose fire, who made the fire. By the menorah, Moshe made the fire also, because that was a halachic world. So then a menorah jumped out. By Aaron, the Erev Rav made the fire. The riffraff made the fire. If the riffraff make the fire, even if there's Aaron there, and even if there's gold, etc., an eagle will always jump out, because it's not done by chokhmah. It's not done with the wisdom of God. So the practical lesson is translated into everyday life. We call a Jewish scholar a Talmid Chacham. First of all, he's still a Talmid. He's still learning. I had the old bad joke that the Rav used to learn late at night, that the Balabatim called up the yeshiva and they said, listen, I thought we got a guy that's a graduate. He's still up, but he's always learning yet. Right? It's no good. We want a graduate. And Torah doesn't work that way. You're always a Talmid. You're either a Talmid of a person or of events in life, but you're always learning. And the second thing is you're a Chacham. You have an instinct for what it is. The Gemara says, David HaMelech, Hashem Imo, the Rabbon Shalom was with him. The Gemara says, Halacha Kamoso B'chol Mokom. Whatever David HaMelech has said is the Halacha, that's the way the Halacha was. That's Hashem Imo. You say Hashem Imo, he conquered all of Eretz Yisrael. He created Jerusalem. He founded the dynasty of the Messiah, everything, right? What's Hashem Imo, Halacha Kamoso B'chol Mokom? The answer is, again, Hashem Imo, so he had Chochma, he knew what the Rabbon Shalom wanted. And therefore, that's why he lives in the halachic world. In the halachic world is the true residence, so to speak, of wisdom and of Chochma.